There we are. Yo, you already know who it is. Price, Rah, Bruh, Me, Goes, Podcast. And we back again. You already know how we coming to y'all today. NBA fans, are y'all good with tanking? Or doesn't matter how you tank. We got to talk about these coaches getting fired. We got to give y'all WrestleMania preview day two that we're going to talk about. We got to talk about the NFL draft. How bad is this draft class? Does it seem bad? Is it really bad? What's really the thing around here? And college football transfer portal. Nico, I'm a leaver. Buddy boy name told it all because he got the hell up out of there.
I'm a goner.
Tennessee doesn't. Yep, he's a goner. And Tennessee doesn't even have to deal with him anymore. All today. 4, 3, 2, 1, go. Bruh Migos podcast. And what we got to do today, Rob?
We hit that music like we always do.
Rob.
What up?
Rob. We got to talk NBA, my boy. First of all, I see that we want to put out a poll question.
Mm-hmm.
Want to put this out there for you fans. Are you guys good with tanking? Is this something that you're opposed to? Are you with it? Are you against it? Do you want to be kind of competitive tanking? What are you thinking? You tell me your opinion first.
So it's the thing with tanking for me. It don't matter with me. Like, I am a person that's like, hey, if you want to be a loser, go be a loser. Because you can see how the Sixers basically did with tanking. Like, they basically did their thing. They had losses after losses. They got talent, but they didn't know what to do with it because they had took so long to get talent that basically so used to losing that once they actually got them, they were like, hey, how do we do this whole thing about getting to the Eastern Conference Finals? How do we do this whole thing about actually beating series and winning out? They had a mindset and a culture of that. So, like, when it comes to tanking, for one, not every team tanks. Charlotte Hornets, y'all don't tank. Y'all just suck. Y'all consistently suck. You could basically set your watch to it, but you guys stink. And so it's got to get to a point where it's like, all right, I'm good with it. I don't mind it if you basically want to do that. I think when it's a big deal or the times that it's a big deal, it's really more like when you have a Cooper Flag. Like when you mm-hmm. got like somebody that's there that's like, hey, they're going to be the first to get them. It's like, all right, what are they going to do with them? Like if he becomes a Hornet, what's going to happen? All the thing that's going to happen is that man going to waste his like first few years in the league, you know, having LaMelo basically being out there to probably annoy him. So, but nah, man, I'm good with it. I don't have a problem. Well, what about you?
Okay. This is how I feel about tanking. Me personally, I have no problem with tanking, but I feel like if you're going to tank, you need to be the best at being bad.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to go out here and give your all at sucking. No homo.
Hey, for you guys to give you all a sucking, go for the gold, all right?
Look,
but
you have
this
to,
context.
Yeah.
Different.
Yeah. It's no Diddy round here, okay?
You
have to give your all at this run. Don't half-ass do it. If I'm tanking for a team, my personal opinion, I don't want a competitive tank. I don't want a halfway tank. I want a full-on tank. I'm talking the year whenever Kobe was hurt and they signed Luol Deng and all of them and then told everybody to sit on the bench. Mm-hmm. That's the type of tanking I'm talking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about I'll go sign people and then tell them, go home.
Be good or be good at it.
Yeah, that's the type of tanking I'm talking about doing. I'm talking about bringing up G League prospects and only winning 5 games if I'm in the NBA. That's the type of tanking I'm on. I want to go 5-77 if possible. Okay? I want to be down there. I don't want to tank a little bit. I want to tank a lot of it. Okay?
You want to basically leave no doubt to the tank. You want it to be to where there is a gold medal that can be given to how well you did it. Like, you want the Nancy Reagan Award of sucking.
Yes.
It's the Nancy Reagan Memorial, I guess, of sucking. Yeah. Yeah, I got you.
Because, look, I do not want to go up in here and just lose. I want to make sure I lose, and my purpose of losing is 1,000%.
I want, you know what? I can absolutely respect that. I honestly can respect that, because I'm more of a person that's like, if you're going to basically do bad, do the best bad you can. And I can't really, there's no 3 feet graves around here. We do 6 feet. All right.
That's it.
Like, we don't, like, there's no half stepping, you know, like, we go all in.
I'm that, bro, because I don't believe in that little bit of, No. I want to lose
that.
I want my number one pick pretty much guaranteed to be. I want to see number one pick silver platter, be like, that's mine right now. I already know you. Just like whenever you about to get your food at a restaurant and they bring out that hot ass plate, you know it's yours coming over there. That's our food right there. That's my pick right there. That hot ass number one pick, that's mine right there. How you know it's yours? Because I already know you. That's the one I ordered right there.
Like, give me that. Give me that.
That's all I want. Now, Rob, I see that you want to revisit Ja Morant, you know?
Yeah. So, if y'all basically saw the show last week, I opened up the show saying that, you know, I would say, hey, Ja, look out for your fellow brother. Basically, stop making me feel like a Republican. But then I thought about it, and I saw a lot of people's reactions to, like, what he was doing. And I saw he had a new celebration, if you will. And to be real, dog, like, I think we all kind of got to take a step back. Like, yeah, granted, we got to look at what he did. So, like, let's actually think about what he was in trouble for, which is holding up a gun, you know, like this, and basically having it in the camera, or holding the can, or dancing with it like this, you know, in a car. The gun didn't discharge. The gun didn't do anything. All he did was those two things that were negligent and childish. And I'm not absolving that. But what he overall did wasn't gang affiliated. It wasn't like Gilbert Arenas doing the whole shit after basically a whole gun incident in the locker room. He didn't have anything in that kind of way. It was just childish shit. And so he got punished for the childish shit. He did the childish shit again, but it was still the whole thing of, hey, you shouldn't do that. And he has. But basically making it to where he can't do do gun celebrations is like, I think that's a step too far. And the reason why I say that is because, like, it's a celebration that a lot of people do. It's the, you know, I got the blicky. I mean, you've seen it with, like, some college football cast that basically he got a tackle and he was like, that was overboard. But Jai didn't do anything like that. He just did the same celebrations that everybody else did. And so we saw a lot of people was like, hey, you can't do that celebration anymore, young man. You can't do that. It's gotta be like, why? Is it that bad that he's doing a celebration? The only thing the celebration does is remind you of what he did. And if basically you're not getting that kind of feeling from the other people doing the celebration, why is this one? You got to get it from him. Is it that big of a deal that he does it? Because he's doing it on the court. He's doing it without a handgun or any kind of weaponry, period. And the fact that he's doing a grenade, he's still like, hey, I'm a killer. Now I'm just a mass murderer. It's the thing about what are we mad at? Why are we mad at this? And is this worth our time? And to all those things, I can't see it as, this is worth our time. What is the point of doing this? We're trying to basically tell a guy, you can't do what everybody else did because you got in trouble. But is that something that's worthwhile? Is that something that is necessary for his growth, our growth, or the game's growth? I would say.
Well, now his grenade's away, bro. He's throwing things everywhere.
He's like, dude, and then he does the thing, and it's like,
it's pineapples.
I mean,
throwing it, covering his ears and stuff. It's some new
It's lame. But it's lame because he's like, I just need to do something else. I like to do something else, so I need an alternative. Y'all said I can't smoke weed. Here's cigarettes. Y'all said I can't drink beer. Here's liquor. Like, it's one of those things. It's like, I just need another outlet because I'm on the court and I have to convey that I did something good. And it's like, is it to where we have to wean you off of gun celebrations? Is there a point to doing that? Not really. Because he got fined $75,000 for it. And it's like, it was there a point of basically fining him just because he repeated it? Like, is it just that, boy, you ain't getting it. Boy, you ain't getting it right. Boy, you don't learn. Is that the basically way that we need to do this? Because that's really what, I think that's what we're treading into versus feeling like Republicans. We're feeling like owners.
Yeah, I feel like at this point, he's been, this is what I'm going to say. I feel like at this point, what has happened is this. He's doing what he's doing, and I'm not against him celebrating. I just feel like at this point, just let him have fun. As long as he ain't killing nobody, let him do what he gonna do.
And that's really it. Like, I don't see the point in basically saying, hey, you can't do this no more, because we all remember what he did. And even then, it was just really more, it could have been worse. It could have been way worse. And hopefully he doesn't do that anymore. Period. But
hopefully
the gun celebrations, I don't think there's a point of us to make it like casting our judgments and you shouldn't, wagging our fingers and all that. He's an adult too.
Exactly. Now, moving on. So we saw another coach bite the dust in the recent weeks. Mike Malone, 10 years, a championship, gone. Okay, and it looks like a lot of it has come down to him and the GM didn't like who they were playing. GM wanted him to play younger players. He wanted to play Russ. Some people say that he was giving Jokic and Jamal Murray and them too much leeway. It's a lot of different things that are going around. But all in all, the team decided to not only part ways with Mike Malone, the Nuggets also decided to not re-sign the GM. And I feel like this came down to this, Rob. We kind of talked about it before the show. This was just like you said, the adult parent said, you know what? Tired of both of you kids. Both of y'all asses going time out then.
This has happened so many times with me. You basically like, I don't care who started it. I don't care whose side to be on. Both y'all going to time out. Both y'all in trouble. And then they got to basically figure it out for themselves. Like, it's absolutely true. I think, I can't see it any other way.
Now, reports have said that Mike Malone was surprised. He said he felt kind of ambushed by what happened. I wouldn't blame him. You just removed from a championship like a couple of years ago. I'm guessing they're treating this as a what have you done for me lately type thing.
Which was a championship 2 years ago.
Yeah, which come on now, championship 2 years ago.
The only championship in your franchise's history.
That's what I'm saying. And you got rid of him. And I'll say this. I do agree. You got rid of one. You got rid of both of them. You hardly ever see this. Like, you hardly ever see this happen. Both of y'all got to go. Mm-hmm. But what I'll say is this. I don't think that I necessarily would have gotten rid of Mike Malone. Now, they say it has shaken up the team a little bit. They feel like they're going to play a little bit better, maybe. I feel like this was too close to playoff time.
Absolutely.
This was a guy who knows his team in and out, and you decided to say, I'm going to fire you right now. This ain't halfway through the season. This ain't the first 15, 20 games in.
We're a week before the playoffs.
Yes. Yes.
Like, playoffs start next week.
Yeah. This is a dangerous time to fire. This is the worst time to me to fire a coach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand you're getting rid of both of them, but Jesus Christ, you couldn't wait till somebody got eliminated or see how far you're going to go before we do this. They did say that they didn't want him winning to give them a false sense of we have to keep him. But for all intents and purposes, you just won a ring 2 years ago.
And it's the fact of the matter of there's precedent for ownership basically moving on. As a Cardinals fan, I still hate that we basically sent Mike Schilt out of there. Like, Mike Schilt was keeping us on a winning path. Mike Schilt had been in the organization since he was like a kid, and they fired his ass because they couldn't get along, because management couldn't get along with him, and now he's killing it over there with the Padres. Like, there's precedent, and granted, he wasn't a World Series winning manager, but there's precedent for waiting till after the season to say, hey, even if he got him to, say, the Western Conference Finals, let's say he got him to the championship, hey, this ain't working out, and basically we're going to cut bait before it's, you know, get festers. But at least you can basically install somebody else in new, somebody else in that basically can now take the reins of the team. And now some interim that basically has the world against them and basically is the one that's trying to hold this shit afloat because, hey, we got to do something in the playoffs because we're the whatever seed they are right now.
This was self-sabotage, Ron. This was self-sabotage.
Feels like it.
You went and drilled holes in your own boat and then told them, all right, I need you to go sail across the ocean right now. But you just put holes in the boat, though. Oh, yeah, but you could make it. Get over there.
Yeah, just paddle. Paddle hard.
Yeah. So now you want me to go harder across the sea now with holes in the boat. I feel like that's what the Nuggets just did to their own organization. Now, granted, if they come out here and it shakes them up and they make a run, all to the better. But do I think they're going to make a run? Hell no.
As of right now, they are the 4 seed, basically set to play the Clippers in the first round.
And I will tell you something right now. The Clippers are the sleeper pick right now coming out of the West. Because that team is very dangerous. Mm-hmm. They've gotten a lot of momentum. Kawhi, James Harden, Big Zubac. That team has gotten healthy.
Yes.
And they've started rolling at the right time. And I do not think that that is a first round matchup to sneeze at.
Not at all. That is a team that you basically, like, the Thunder is on watch. Like, you got to think about how well the Thunder has been. Now you got a team that has Kawhi Leonard, who is a former Finals MVP. You got James Harden, who's a former MVP and has been to the Finals. You got all these guys that are on this team that can make some motherfuckers shake. They got Ty Lue, who is a championship-winning coach. These are guys that have been to the mountaintop in their respective times. This is not something to sneeze at. Like, this is going to be a team to reckon with. Like, whew.
If Denver goes out in the first round to the Clippers, I would not be surprised, though.
I wouldn't.
I would not be surprised.
No.
I would. And to be honest with you, I'd tip my hat to the Clippers because I'd be like, y'all caught fire, and out of nowhere, it just happened. It just happened. They won 9 out of the last 10. It's only them and the Thunder and Minnesota are 8-2, 8-2, and them at 9-1 in the last 10. Okay? That's that shit that we talk about in baseball and in different sports where teams get hot going into the playoffs. And this is where they're most dangerous at. Oh, I got a little fire. My train is rolling. We starting to go downhill now. This is dangerous. Mm-hmm. This is dangerous from them. Now, I also seen something that you said. How far do you think we are from robot coaches with all of this shakeup?
I'll be completely honest. I thought we talked about this before. Because I feel like we talked about this in a conversation, but we didn't let y'all in this. And I'm basically put it point blank. So I've been thinking for a while now as far as like AI, you know, of course, AI Rob, whenever he makes his predictions and, you know, that's absolutely wrong. I ain't gonna say the Chris Sale thing was AI Rob, but I ain't gonna say it's not. But like, when AI Rob comes in and he basically comes in, and he makes these wrong predictions. Is it going to be to where coaches in all these leagues are going to think about installing some artificial intelligence to coach their teams? Because we often hear about, hey, the playoff analytics, sabermetrics, when it comes to baseball, like, and how the GMs are kind of going more centric towards that. Is it going to be to where there is a team that is going to be completely managed, like maybe just the coach wise, just to basically make decisions by AI? Is there going to be a Watson that's going to be on the sidelines that's just going to be basically making these decisions? And it's like, when it comes to these coaching changes, I was thinking, like, especially because a lot of these coaching changes have to do with rifts in basically management, rifts in how the carrying out of the team is going with the coach. Is it going to be to where they're going to basically say, hey, we're going to feed this information into a machine, and then 2 hours before game time, let's say for the NBA, here's your starting lineup. 3 hours before game time for MLB, here's your starting lineup. And then all the decisions are going to be fed to this one thing over and over again. And basically, it's kind of like you see those chess matches with the robots. Is it going to be to where we're going to have something like that on the sidelines for each of these teams so that the GM can basically carry out what he wants carried out, so the owner can basically have what he wants, which is somebody not getting on my nerves? Like, is it going to be is this going to be something that's part of the future? I asked y'all that, and you can hit us up at Bermigos Pod, a lot of places, Tip Threads, Blue Sky. The poll is going to be on Blue Sky, probably on YouTube as well. But like, hit us up on that and see and ask, and let's keep this conversation going.
This should definitely be an interesting one. Now, from NBA to we're counting down. We're about a week away from the start of WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
So
weird having it this late too.
Yeah, it does feel late. It does feel late. But with that being said, Rob, whose side is Paul Heyman on?
Whose side? He had been at the side of then CM Punk prior to CM Punk leaving WWE. But basically, he got his new man, and he's staying with his new man. But then you got also Seth Rollins, who's right there in the wings. And he's had issues with Roman Reigns, of course, former member of the Shield, and with CM Punk, with basically just a lot of personal shit, essentially. And so I'm just thinking, like, whose side is Paul Heyman on? And I want to ask y'all, too. We're going to put this as a poll question on Blue Sky on YouTube. Who side is Paul Heyman on? And for me, I'm going to make my guess. And I'm going to ask you, Nate, see what you say. But I personally think that Paul Heyman is going to side with Roman Reigns. And here's why. I think that he sees Roman Reigns as his biggest benefactor. He sees basically Roman Reigns as the guy that's going to carry him to the top. He sees Roman Reigns as the person that's going to steer him and keep him safe against anybody, all enemies or whatever. And so I know y'all saw that, like, yeah, CM Punk is basically bringing up, hey, you owe me a favor. Hey, you owe me a favor. Hey, you owe me a favor. If there's anything that I know about Paul Heyman, it's that motherfucker will break a deal. He's a businessman, yes, but he's a liar first. And so he's basically going to do what he can to break that deal. And he has somebody that's going to keep him safe to break that deal with Roman Reigns. I think it's going to happen, okay? And my dark horse, which I've seen somebody said it. I wanted to say it last week. We didn't get a chance to say it. We ran out of time. Seth Rollins is that dark horse that Paul Heyman is going to go to. And here's why. And I think it's because basically It's the shot you don't see, you know, because everything has been about is Paul Heyman on Roman Reigns' side? Is Paul Heyman on CM Punk's side? What if basically Paul Heyman says, I'm going to go with the guy that is the enigma, that is the revolutionary, is the C, I can't remember all his name, but he's Seth freaking Rollins, you know, like that. That's the one where I'm like, okay. Maybe that is because it's just going to be something that nobody sees coming. You know, apathy is more found in routine than it's found in spontaneity. And so I think that people going to want to basically have that kind of oomph and really be driven to and drawn to, hey, what is this? This is new. Didn't see this coming. Oh, I like it. Oh, I want more of it. And I think that's what it is. So what you think, though?
So I'm going to say this. I, too, am somewhat drawn to him sticking by Roman Reigns.
Mm-hmm.
But just like you said, the shot that you don't see coming is the one that usually hurts people the most. And I think that shot is him going with Seth Rollins. Mm. I see him maybe letting the tribal chief do his own thing now and attaching himself to Seth Rollins and trying to make Seth Rollins as big of a title person as possible. Because there are things that we feel like a certain person that is no longer with WWE screwed over that we were talking about before the show. And mm-hmm. I just want to say, fuck you, Vince. Just go ahead and throw that one out there. That's from the heart, too. I just want you to know that.
Second it.
Yeah, I gotta let you know that one. But I feel like that's going to be the change, and we're going to shake up the WWE a little bit. And I think it's going to add a new dynamic. It's going to give us something else to look at. It's going to give us a different angle from Paul Heyman. Now, do I think that this can be a great thing? Yes. If played right, yes. This can be a tremendous thing. Because at this point, the bloodline is what it is. Mm-hmm. You kind of want to add new people to the mix of what's going on. To me, this is the perfect time to add new people to the mix of what's going on. That's why I can see the Seth Rollins thing.
That makes sense.
Now, from a triple threat with Paul Heyman involved to Naomi, the heel. Rob, what do you feel is wrong about this? Like, you don't feel wrong about the storyline, but what do you feel is wrong about this? Like, let me know.
Well, it's not that there's anything wrong with this. It's more that I feel wrong about heel Naomi. And what I would mean by that is, I didn't think the shit would work. I told everybody and my mom, like, this shit ain't gonna work. This shit is not great. Like, Naomi as a heel is not something that basically anybody, like, she's too happy to be a heel. Like, it's like Rey Mysterio as a heel. This shit don't work, you know? But she's been doing the damn thing with it. The promo that she had with Bianca, the segments that she's been having, talking about Jay, talking about basically her being hurt by Bianca. Like, it's been stellar. She's been doing the damn thing for it. What I do not feel wrong about when it comes to storyline is that I don't think it has any legs. I think it has the one-off with Jade at WrestleMania, who Jade has basically been doing great too. But it's the fact of the matter of it ain't got that many legs. Like, I don't know where this goes with them. I don't know, like, where Jade goes after this. Like, it's a lot basically being put into this one thing, and I don't really think that it's going to help much of anything. It's going to have a match. It's going to give a match. But I don't know how great of a match it's going to give. And that's where I am with it. Like, I'm just not very hopeful, not very big on it. What you think? What you think about the situation?
Like you, I don't know where this thing is going. It's so hard to call. Mm-hmm. I can look at it. And to me right now, it's like fading dice, though. I don't know which direction this is going to go. And I was with you in the beginning whenever we talked about the Naomi going heel thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, Rob, you're probably right. This shit ain't gonna work. But it's not that it's not working. Where does this story go? That's my issue. Maybe they got some. I don't know. But if I was a betting man, it's a lot of times we get to this point in stories and we don't really go where we think we need to go, or we don't end up somewhere where we need to be. And I think that's the biggest concern right now. Because they're talented women, okay? They can wrestle. But storyline, where do we go? It's just like things that we wished for. We were talking about it before the thing. And I'm going to say it again. Fuck you, Vince, from the bottom of my heart. We could have had the Hurt Business versus the Bloodline. Mm-hmm. That would have been one of the biggest things ever in wrestling right now. Fire with three eyes and seven E's, okay? It would have been that good. But we're never going to get that. Mm-hmm. Because somebody decided to fire the Hurt Business. You know? Just want to say it again. Fuck you, Vince McMahon. stud it out there. Just hope he knows, Rob. I just hope he knows. That's it. I just hope he knows.
If you know Vince McMahon and you could basically carry him this message, carry on the fuck use to him. Go ahead and give him the link to this. Go ahead and just make sure.
Let him know.
Make sure that fuck you travels to him. All right. Make sure it gets to him and that penciled on mustache that he got. Just make sure it gets and lays in deep to him.
In the words of my boy T.I., expeditiously. Just expeditiously. Just let him know. Let him know from the bottom of my heart. That's how I feel. Because he has done us a vast injustice. But I'm not going to harp on it. But that's what I think is going on, though. Rob, I see you over here campaigning for Intercontinental Champ Dirty Dog.
I don't know about y'all, and y'all know this is going to be a Fatal 4-Way match for the Intercontinental title between Bron Breakker, Penta, Finn Balor, and Dirty Dom. And everybody felt, or I felt like the going thing was Bron Breakker versus Penta, because those two could have an absolutely phenomenal match. And for me, I don't 100% want the dissolving of the Judgment Day basically going with that, or like feeding into that, but I'm cool with it basically if we get Intercontinental Champ Dirty Dominic Mysterio, because that man has earned it. That man has been working his ass off. That man has been absolutely basically keeping like this Judgment Day shit up. He's already been, you know, really good at WrestleMania, especially with the match with his dad. Like, this is something that I think that basically should happen. And granted, it does take the title off of Bron Breakker, but maybe Bron Breakker could basically be in a title for somebody else that might win a world championship or something like that. So, because that man has already had some history with him, maybe if that's going to happen. But I'm just saying Dirty Dominic Mysterio, Intercontinental Champ, to basically bring the death knell to the Judgment Day would be basically be the best for all. I want that. I cannot go against it. I need it.
If it means Bron Breakker is going to chase bigger goals somewhere else, I'm with him. I'm with him. I feel like he needs to chase bigger goals. Give him a chance, WWE. Throw him into the mix. Just throw him into the mix. Look, he's talented. Clearly, he's explosive. He's that guy. And he reminds me, because even though it's Rick Steiner's son, he reminds me so much of Scott. He reminds me of Scott, though.
He got Rick's intensity. He got Scott, like, he...
Yeah. I just gotta say this. You know what you gonna call me now from all the audience? The Big Bad Podcast Daddy. Okay, that's what you're going to call me now. In the legend of Scott Steiner, who was the Big Bad Booty Daddy, you're going to call me the Big Bad Podcast Daddy now. That's what I want to be known as. Anytime I watched the Scott Steiner promo, and he was that Big Papa Pump, I remember why I was with that character, bro. Holla if you hear me.
There is 133rd and a third percent chance that I ain't calling you that shit. But y'all can. Y'all can go for it. Because the man wants to be called it, and he's going to make it happen, all right? But y'all do it. Y'all got it.
That has to be... It seems so generic of a name, like of a nickname, but I was with that shit. I was like, this is what you could call me.
I mean, I'm just not. It's just the people, the underlings. Y'all call him that. I'm gonna call you Nate.
I'm fine with it.
But I get it. I get it though. I got you. Let me kind of go into the next one, because I need to talk about this for a little minute. Cause I'm gonna talk about the main event right here. The creme de la creme, the Royal Rumble winner versus the World Heavyweight Champ. Or excuse me, the undisputed WWE champ, Cody Rhodes, John Cena. This is the third year in a row that I have no fucking clue what's going to happen to Cody Rhodes. Like, and I love it. Because like I said before, apathy is found in routine, not spontaneity. This is something that basically we've been given. What's going to Cody Rhodes? Is Cody Rhodes going to win it all? Is Cody Rhodes going to be, if what is going to happen when basically John Cena says, I want a 17th world title? Because John Cena is John Cena. And you can, and there's nothing that basically we can do. He is the greatest of all time. He is the dude. He is the guy that I put over Ric Flair. He's the guy that I put over Hogan. He's the guy that I put over Inoki. He's the guy that I put over name a dude. Stone Cold, Rock, HBK, Triple H. Name a dude. I say John Cena for every bit of piece that he's done for the game itself, pun intended. He has basically been like Make-A-Wish shit. Championship, being the guy that basically was the heel that wasn't a heel when everybody wanted him to be a heel, and he's kept being a babyface and still got booed and still was overcoming the shit. He is that dude. And now here's the possible crowning of the record that basically he's about to have. And so when it comes to this shit, when it comes to, are they going to give John Cena the number 17 and John Cena takes the ball and goes home? Is that the possibility, especially when that essentially happened to him with CM Punk at Money in the Bank, where CM Punk beat him for the title and then took the ball and went home? Yes. Is this something that basically is going to happen? Is this something that we got a basis set up for? Is he going to bring the spinner belt back? Because he was joking about it and I loved it. But what is going to happen? Because I feel that it's going to be Cena winning. And the reason why is because I think that Cody Rhodes' title reign has been cool. The year that he's basically had this title has been cool. And I don't think cool is basically what you want as a champ. John Cena said it best. You basically still don't show us who you actually are. You're this prim and proper. Like my kid. My son, every time he basically sees, no, my daughter actually. So every time she sees John Cena, she asks, is John Cena running for wrestling president? Because the thing about, not John Cena, excuse me, is Cody Rhodes, every time she sees Cody Rhodes, she's like, is Cody Rhodes running for wrestling president? Like, that's every time she sees him, like, is he trying to be wrestling president? And I'll be like, yeah, kinda. Because she don't even watch wrestling, she sees that shit. Like, he's somebody that's more political and seen more political than what people say about what John Cena was. And so yeah. I think that when it comes to, hey, let's see what happens here. Let's go ahead and give the old guy the title. I think that's what goes here. And I don't know what's going to happen after it, but I'm going on more of that spontaneity side than just the routine of let the champ win. But if the champ does win, then he's going to get broken off by Bron Breakker.
So I'm going to say this, and I'm kind of with you. Rob, do you realize that everything that John Cena has done, that they have pushed Cody Rhodes into the slot of a lot of those things?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember this, but I had to think on it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but John Cena had a Clash of Clans character.
Oh, yeah.
I want to say so. He did. Yeah. Who has a Clash of Clans character now? Everywhere that we look, they've inserted him now to try to take the spot of John Cena. Do you know what this is? And I'm not making this a direct comparison, but this is what came to my mind at one point. This is like whenever they tried to slot Shawn Michaels in after Diesel, but Diesel wasn't as big as Cena.
Mm-hmm.
Them thinking that Shawn Michaels was gonna raise the ratings again, and they wound up having to go back to Bret Hart because Bret Hart was more of an attraction and he bought more with him. Granted, neither one of them ever had the impact of Cena like on that scale.
Right.
Look how this is turning back out. I want Cena with the championship. I know it's a lot of people out there who are going to say Cody needs to walk away with this belt. I feel you, big dog, but hear me out. He is the imitation crab meat. He ain't the real shit. He's behind the real one, and we try to make him fill in. He ain't even the real shit, though. You're trying to make him feel every gap that Cena was there for. And it's not happening like y'all thought it was going to happen. Because what you said is correct. His title run ain't really been that spectacular. Mm. You know who has had spectacular title runs?
Who, dog?
John Cena. Why are we trying to make Cody Rhodes this prim, proper fill-in for our never-give-up word life Dr. Thugonomics that everybody fell in love with versus you trying to feed me this guy who I know he's a good guy, but it's something about kind of meshing him in the spot that's not working.
It's because he's got that Dale Earnhardt Jr. to him. Like, it's that he's not his daddy. His daddy basically got a lot of people's hearts. But you got to kind of take him for what he is. He's a little bit more prim, a little bit more proper than what his daddy was. He ain't the exact, you know, like, kind of 180 to him. But he's just like, he's more Ric Flair-ish than he is Dusty. But the thing is, it's just like, he got some magnetism to it. He just ain't got the same amount. And I think that he hasn't unleashed that part of it. And that's kind of why I think things became stale. Like, people got behind him because it's like, okay, he did work his ass off to get back here. Okay, he does have a following. Okay, he does basically command some level of attention. It's just that there's still that something that's missing where it's like, I can't fully hug you. I can only give you that church hug. Like, it's something about you that I can't really fully embrace.
Do you remember whenever Dusty cut that promo and he was in that mink and he told Ric Flair, I think he had on the cashmere.
Yeah. Like, fake ass, whatever.
Yeah. And look, dog, I ain't seen that from Cody, dog. Cody's comes from a line in a family. People are personality characters.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to see where is he is. Because this ain't really it, dog.
Well, the thing is, what he's basically giving you is like I said, politics. Like, politics has a certain level of like, oh, this is fake. And I got to understand that this is fake. And I got to basically know that, okay, you're not being genuine. You can't be genuine. Because, like, even with Gold, like, with Dustin, Dustin doesn't really give you anything that Dusty gave you. Like, he doesn't have that kind of raw magnetism that Dusty has, but it ain't really that many people that do, period.
Yeah.
That's ever been in the business. It's just that these niggas were born from him, and they basically have at least some, but not really much of anything. These are two cats that grew up with money, with stuff, where Dusty was the son of a plumber and basically had to fight for everything he worked, daddy. He had to do that. They didn't. They kind of had it set for him.
But here's the thing, though. I feel like Dustin was his character. He was who he was. Like, he became Goldust.
Yes.
And he was that person. But it's something about, it has to be what you said, the politics. Because I look at him and I'm like, I want to believe you.
Yeah.
But I can't. It's like, I want to believe you, but I can't. And what makes it even worse.
Yeah.
Exactly. And what makes it worse is that promo that him and Cena had against each other. And Cena told him, you are the clone, the lesser version of me.
Mm-hmm.
And you ain't there. And then the Clash of Clans commercial comes out. And I see him do, and I'm like, WWE, what the fuck is up? Just told y'all he was the lesser version of him. And now you gonna give me a Clash of Clans, and you knew this was Cena first, and you keep throwing all of this out here? Like, I didn't already see this. It's like, you just proved this point. You just proved this point. Not only did you give him his cake, you said, John, eat that shit too, because you deserve it. Because you called this shit right on the nose. This is what we about to do with him. And I'm like,
yeah,
what the? I just couldn't. It was like if you told me that, I don't know, you told me the numbers for the Powerball, and I told you, yeah, right. And then all of them came out the next day. And I was like, damn, why ain't listen? It's exactly what happened. And now it makes the inner fan, the inner part of me that maybe wanted to see Cody succeed, that shit is gone now.
Mm.
Because Cena just proved me, he just proved it all right. That they trying to make you me, and you can't be me.
Can't see me, can't be me.
And it's, dog, it's just horrible. It's horrible. And not knowing what's going to happen. At this point, I'm just like, give Cena the title, though. Let him get his ball and go home. Just give it to him. Because he didn't call it for y'all. He didn't tell y'all what it is. He's not me. Y'all want him to be me. He can't be me. He doesn't even know who he fully is. So give me me and let me get this 17 and get on. And I'm with it. I'm with it at this point. I give no fucks else. Look, give Cena that title. Matter of fact, I said this on the last show. That title is due for a redesign anyway. Get the cookie. Give Cena his belt so he can go home with number 17 and y'all come up with something else for Cody to come through with, because it ain't there no more, though. It ain't there. Look, I'm with the look. The crowd can sing his theme music and everything else. It's just imitation crab meat, though. It ain't the real shit. That's it. You gave me that fake ass shit on myself and said, it's crab meat. What the fuck is this? That's just how it feels right now, though. That's just how it feels for me. But I want to touch on one more thing. And me and you kind of talked about this a little bit. I miss the big in-show like sequences. Like that dopamine rush that they give us like at the end of like a Monday Night Raw. Where like finisher, run in, chair shot, high flying move. I just miss those dopamine rushes sometimes. And I'm not saying that you got to get it to me all the time. Mm-hmm. Just every now and then, you know.
A little fix.
Yeah, just give me a little fix. Just hit me with the dog and be like, oh yeah, that was good, right? And with that being said, it made me say, I hate to sound like an old man, but I miss yesteryear sometime, though. I just miss yesteryear sometime. The huge run-ins and SmackDown versus Raw and Walls of Jericho being put on people and stunners and rock bottoms and last rides and people catching clothesline from hells. And just, matter of fact, even like just the funny skits. Like I watched the Teddy's Wedding the other night. And Godfather comes out there, and he talks to Teddy, and he said, well, somebody gotta come take a ride on the whole train. And JBL comes way from announcing, and he's like, I'm going to take a ride. And you just see JBL breaking his neck, and everybody's leaving with Godfather, even though this is supposed to be Teddy's wedding. I forgot her name. But
Crystal Marshall.
Crystal, there you go.
Still fine.
Yes.
Still fine.
But it pleased me so much to watch that, even though that was like a 4-minute segment. I was like, that is the most silly, enjoyable 4 minutes of Godfather coming out there saying, you know, we had to come to the dirty South. And I'm like, go ahead, Godfather, tell them. And in my head, I'm watching. I'm like, Godfather bought the hoes. We had the wedding. What a kibasi. About to pop this thing off of you. I was invested in it. I was invested in it, you know. I was like, why Godfather couldn't be all right now? I said, y'all have turned this so sideways. Now I can't even have fun whenever I'm old enough. Now, you know? I'm like, I wanted to be out there and let Godfather, you know, let a brother come on the whole train, you know, all the women out there. You know? Just come on. Just let me get me. You know, just let me get me.
Let the big bad podcast daddy get him some.
Exactly. There you go. But we gotta talk to you guys. Yeah. See, I love it, Rob. I love it. The big bad podcast daddy. But we have to talk to you guys about NFL. Me and Rob have been at a crossroads about the past. Yeah. Is this NFL draft class, why does it seem that all of a sudden this shit has went left? And it seems so bad now, Rob.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? What do you think? Because we've been debating this for like the last week back and forth.
Like, it's gotta be to where it's like people are so down on the draft, like the QB class, that it's just like everything was reverberating to everything else. Like, because we got basically, this is the class that has possibly the best prospect in, arguably the best prospect I've seen, like with Travis Hunter. Because think about it, like, we've never seen anything like this. I'm not going to say this is a Shohei Ohtani situation. This is not that. We discussed it. It's in the archives, whatever, whatever. But it's the closest thing that the NFL has ever had to it, where you got a guy that's so exceptional on both sides of the ball that it's like, hey, what are we going to actually do? And everybody and their mom is at the consensus of make him a corner, give him 20 plays on offense, call it a day. Like, I've basically, from this podcast to every single podcast I've heard that have basically brought up the whole conversation of Travis Hunter, it's literally been keep him at corner, give him some plays on offense. There is, yep. You will hardly hear anybody say, make him a wide receiver. But if that man goes to number two, to the Browns, get ready to learn a route tree, buddy. Like, that man is going to be route treeing it up, because they need him more as a wide receiver than they need him as. Like, it's a lot more. And so, no, but it's like you have that guy, you got Abdul Carter, who everybody says is going to be an absolute stud in the league. And then you got everybody else. You got Ashton Jeancey, who basically some people will say is arguably the best prospect in the draft. I wouldn't say that. I still keep it at Travis Hunter. But
mm-hmm.
it's like you got those three folks in this draft, and then you got a bunch of folks. And I think part of it is because a lot of the people that are up there are people that aren't necessarily household college football names that we've been kind of evoking for this season. Like, for example, T-Mac out of Arizona. We love him, but it's been to where Steve Smith said some words about him. He made the comment of he doesn't watch film, and his shit has just kind of dropped since.
Yes.
You got Shadur, who we're going to talk about a little bit more in a minute, but like, he's the number two, like, he's slated as a number two quarterback prospect to Cam Moore's number one, who is probably going to be the number one overall. But for me, I don't really have a lot of confidence in Cam Moore. I think that he is probably the number one overall pick for Tennessee, who basically needs a lot more. I would say should probably trade that number one overall pick, because they need so much more than they need a quarterback. They need quarterback too. But they also need a lot more other things outside of that offensive line, essentially. But it's like, there is so much that it's like, we don't know. And there's so many things that we're just like, we can't really give you heads or tails on a lot of these cats. That it's just like, yeah, the draft seems like it gets down. Even though it seems like there's a lot of talent, like say T-Mac, Shamar Stewart coming out of South Carolina, Jalen Walker out of Georgia, Cam Ward, like I said, you know, Tyler Warren out of Penn State, like guys that are straight up talented. It's just that we're just not like about them.
Thing is this, I feel like Cam Ward, if I'm drafting a quarterback, if I'm Tennessee, you haven't decided to move back, you're going in on a quarterback, cool, okay? Cam Ward would be my pick because he can do so much.
Yeah.
It's just your team needs so much. So is he a right pick? Yes. But that team just needs so much. I'm okay with him going number one. Okay? Because it's like I said, if you compare him to Shador, Shador is the more accurate and probably pro ready. Mm-hmm. But Cam has everything else. Mm-hmm. He got everything else that Shador doesn't like.
So much talent. Like, he has a lot of talent. And I don't mean to cut you off, but my biggest thing has been with Cam is like, are you going to keep the easy, and then when we need the hard, bring it? Like, are you going to basically be the dude that's going to be able to make the second and six, but be able to get us out of a jam and basically go that 40-yard bomb that we need when we need it? Because it's that Josh Allen effect. Like, yes, Josh Allen just won the MVP, but Josh Allen also wants to throw through every single defensive back that's out there in the field. Also, Russell as well. Are you going to basically try to out-muscle a league that basically has a lot of muscle, or will you actually just make the right play when we need it? Because he needs to, yes, to your point, he needs to basically do these things because they don't have shit. I'm looking at their roster now. They ain't got shit. They got the Calvin Ridley, okay. They got Van Jefferson, okay. Mm-hmm. They got some dude. They don't have, they got Tony Pollard still there, but they don't really have any kind of talent on that offensive side that you can basically be like, oh yeah, I got a matchup nightmare here. I got to worry about this, whatever, whatever. Like, that's the thing with them. And so if they're going to get Cam Ward to basically anchor that offense and be somebody that can make big plays and possibly hopefully raise their floor, it's still on shaky ground to me because sometimes I feel like he's going to try to Superman shit where he just needs to basically be a modern, where he just needs to be Clark Kent. And I think that that's going to get the best of him and it's going to get the best of the Titans.
And I hate to say this, but Shador dropping may be the best thing for Shador's career because where he can wind up and where Cam is going to a 3-14 team. Mm-hmm. Is going to make him have to figure out how to keep the simple and do what they need to do. Like, granted, if they would have, I don't know, a 7-8, let's just say they were, I don't know, 9-8. Let's say Tennessee went 9-8, which would be a heaven sent for them to see a positive.
Watch out for raining frogs. Watch out for like the sea of fire coming up.
All of it. I mean, watch out for all of it if that's the case. If he was to do that, it would show how much of an improvement he had to make for that team. But then they also need to continue to make improvements because whenever I think of Tennessee and relevancy, and this is the God's honest truth, some of y'all are going to say, well, what about whenever Ryan Fitzpatrick had him in the playoffs? Like, I don't count that shit, okay? Ryan Fitzpatrick was, like, flash in the pan at times. He's been flash in the pan many places. And it was what it was at the time. Okay? So don't call me no hater. I'm just stating facts. Okay? Whenever I think of Tennessee and relevancy, the last time I think of a couple people, I think of whenever Eddie George was there. Okay? I think of the one good season that they had with Vince Young. Mm-hmm. And I think of McNair. That's it.
No Derrick Henry?
Well, I'll say Derrick Henry, yes. And, well, I'll say Derrick Henry. But what I mean by super relevancy is they were there all the time, not knocked out at times. Because the problem with Derrick Henry was the offense and Ryan Fitzpatrick was like whatever, you know. So I'll even give you that one. Derrick Henry, Ryan Fitzpatrick, I just don't like how much they invested in the Ryan Fitzpatrick and not enough somewhere else to help. Wait, Derrick Henry at
you time. Mean Ryan Tannehill?
Ryan, was it Tannehill?
Yeah.
I thought it was Fitzpatrick that they had there too.
No, Fitzpatrick.
It was Tannehill?
Yeah.
I thought, wasn't Fitzpatrick their quarterback 1 year though? I thought that he was.
I'm making sure. I think you might. They all, these Ryans all look alike. Okay.
Yeah, they all look the same.
No.
But it might have been Tannehill too.
Nah, excuse me. Ryan Tannehill played for the Tennessee Titans in 2013.
Okay. But wasn't it Fitzpatrick since then had been there at one point?
Probably not Tannehill, sorry. Ryan Fitzpatrick only played there in 2013.
Okay, well, there you go. Where was Tannehill then? But these are all of these lines look alike.
All of every bit.
They're not. That team, it had been relevant with Derrick Henry at one point, and then not Derrick Henry. Like, I'm going to be honest with you, Tennessee. His legacy is now in Baltimore as far as I'm concerned.
Really?
In a way, yes. Because whenever I'm going to think of some of his best moments, I'm going to think of playoff Derrick Henry in Baltimore next to Lamar Jackson. I'm like, one of the greatest 1-2 punches in the backfield ever. Even though he spent most of his career in Tennessee. I know I do have some Tennessee Titan fans, like my homeboy Magmo, who's been like, yeah, I'm a Titans fan forever. And I'm like, I don't see how you could live in that house with that bad roof in Tennessee.
Like, they got roaches and everything.
Yeah, that's just, it's a lot over there. It's young people. They have some young talent there. But it's a lot wrong with that house over there. That house is bad over there. Floorboards creaking, a roof be leaking and shit, and man, they ain't repaired enough over there for me. Maybe that's just me being me, but they looking for Cam to come over there and nail up a lot of shit and try to patch a lot of shit. I don't know how much he's gonna be able to patch, but he'll get it. Hopefully he gets it. But I also feel like we said, this could be the best thing for Shador because it looks like Shador got the possibility of falling 9 or lower, which I can see the Saints grabbing him at 9. Yeah. Eric Carr's shoulder possibility of not being there. I could see the Saints giving Shador a shot, but I could also see him falling further.
I don't see the point of him going to the Saints. It's like, because for me, it's like the Saints got so many problems that when, like, Shador is not going to fix. And he basically, them picking him at 9, like, doesn't fix the fact that they basically have, like, problems with their defense. That they need basically more people on offense. Like, they need help. They don't need Shador. Like, they got Spencer Rattler there. Granted, not great. But is Shador that much better than Spencer Rattler? Or is you just know about him more? And that'd be my question. Like, is he basically, or let's put it like this. Do you go get Shador and then you miss out on next year's draft class? You're going to be shitty again. Like, why don't you just wait for the possibility of either Arch Manning or the guy we're going to talk about in a little minute, Nico Iamaliva? Like you got some other cats that's going to be waiting in the wings for next year. Why would you go after this class and basically have a cat that you already know you ain't going to really care for?
Maybe they're thinking that he can help. It's this to me. I'm thinking that people think that Shador is going to be poised to handle what he has to handle at the NFL level because of his pedigree. He's been working with Brady. That's Deion Sanders, all of that other good jazz. You know, I think that's what they're looking at. Now, me personally, I kind of like your other idea of seeing him fall to 11 to see if chaos ensues and San Francisco tries to pick you.
I want that more than anything in the world. I don't give a fuck about the Niners and basically their progress. I just want to see chaos. And I want to see basically them saying, hey, Brock Purdy, you did all this work for us, and we're not going to give you an extension. Instead, we're going to give it to the guy that's Deion's son. And they're basically going to do the whole marketing thing because must be the money in San Francisco. Like, I think that's going to basically be, it's going to be so much better for me. Maybe not for them. And it's the fact of the matter of what they've basically been saying about Shador, the fact that he is such a cerebral quarterback and doesn't really have such a athletic skill set, even though I know that Kyle Shanahan wants people with athletic skill sets. But somebody that's basically just more of a thinker than a doer, especially what he wanted with Mac Jones, wanted with Kirk Cousins, wanted with Brock Purdy. Like, this might be the whole thing of, like, hey, let's go get this guy who, like you said, can handle things, but also like is somebody that we can look at for the future to be our quarterback. I just want that. I don't care where Shadur actually goes. I just want the chaos, baby. All I want is some chaos. That's it.
Let me tell you something. If this happens, this will be the lowest of a low blow that a team could pull against a quarterback who is giving you so much as Brock Purdy is there.
Mm-hmm.
This would be the equivalent to Brock was wrestling and he turned his back and the ref wasn't looking and he caught the low blow. Bam! And then Shador pins him and he gets the win and walks out with the title. And it would be such a disappointment. And I'm going to tell you, San Francisco, I think over a year ago, I got on here with Rob and I said, it's time to pay Purdy.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and pay him now
and
get it out the way. And San Francisco said, I ain't paying shit.
Snooze button.
I'm going to wait this shit out. And if this is the moment that they've been waiting on, I'm going to say this is the biggest touche that I've ever saw in my life. To wait out on the next quarterback to come out of the draft for you to say, hey, that rookie contract and that meal we gave you and shit, chump change compared to what we going to give him. Go ahead, get him out of here. Go get it out the mud, baby. Go get it from somewhere else.
Which is kind of wild because, like, if they were to do that, it would be extra shitty because they got a lot of holes that they got to fill because of the attrition that they basically had. A lot of their players going down. We're basically having to think about what's going to happen after Trent Williams and everything like that. Like, they got a lot of holes to fill, but I want the chaos, baby. I just want the chaos. I don't care where it comes from. I don't care if he falls to 33 or where the 49ers picking in the second round. Whatever. I want the chaos. That's all I want. That's all I want. Which I can see Shadur more dropping out of the first round than getting picked at 9 by the Saints, to be honest with you.
I think he's either going to be 9 or I think it might be 21 if he goes in the first round to Pittsburgh.
Yeah. I see
which that. Would be crazy. If he went to Pittsburgh to a ready-made team with DK and Pickens already.
Yeah.
That would be, I'm not going to call him Patrick Mahomes, but that would be the equivalent to giving your quarterback the Patrick Mahomes start. Even though he may not be as high talent-wise as Patrick, this is giving them the Patrick Mahomes start. I'm giving you 2 ready-made receivers, a tight end, a pretty damn good defense, a pretty decent line, and I'm telling you, let's go try to win.
It's and basically
that would be crazy.
It's basically what's about to happen with JJ McCarthy, to be honest with you.
Yeah, because the Vikings are the Vikings. Bro, I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna applaud your team at having everything already there for their rookie quarterback, even though he was injured his first season, to step in there and say, "I got wide receivers, I got a tight end, I got a defense.
We only got a lot. We got yeah. Motown. We went and got Jordan Mason. We got like a lot of talent on the defense. Like, nah, they did the damn thing."
I say this: look, NFL GMs, pay attention. I said it a long time ago. It's teams who show you how to do this. Patrick Mahomes had Andy Reid. He had weapons waiting on him. He had a defense. He had all of this. And then they did the smartest thing ever. Once they saw they had their horse, they said, fuck that four-year shit. Give him a long-term deal so we ain't got to pay him for a while. And this is how you handle that situation. Give him the long-term deal because you know the money's coming.
That market.
Set that shit now. So whenever he's happy and the other ones are going 4 years and they damn near doubling what they're getting or 10, 12 mil higher a year, he's already set. He happy. He got you under the cap. Take care. You know you need him. This is a goddamn quarterback-driven league. You know whenever you find your horse, hitch to him, give him his goddamn contract. Nah, be done with this. And that's what I think y'all going to wind up doing. If he has a good year and y'all win 10, 12 games, It wouldn't surprise me if y'all come out there and lace him for 7-8 years and say, here you go, JJ, take this.
I don't know about that. We'll see, though. I mean, it wouldn't be the worst thing.
It wouldn't be, but I think I'm going to say give him a year or two, maybe three, if he produces at a high level and y'all stay high in playoff ready, pushing near a Super Bowl. I think Minnesota's going to walk out there and say, hey, bro, let's give him 6-7 years up front. Go your money. So we ain't got to deal with this for a while. Because I'm going to be honest with y'all, I don't think Patrick Mahomes is done winning. Okay.
That's another topic for another day, and I think we're going to save that for next week.
Yeah. But I'm going to just throw it out there. I don't think he's done winning. Well, get your checkbooks out and saddle up for the long haul right now. Look, Father Time is undefeated. That's the best thing I can ever tell you. Father Time is undefeated. I'll stick with that forever and just say, I'm going to try to outweight this month. This is how I'm going to try to beat you. I'm going to beat you in the game of attrition. But we got to talk one more thing. College football, right? Nico Amoliva entering the transfer portal. Where do you think this is going to go with the whole transfer portal and money and everything? Where is this headed now?
So everybody's saying free agency. Everybody's saying this and that. So that's more likely to what it is. I don't think we're going to get to a point where there's going to be a set structure that says that you're going to have to basically be at a school for 2 years, that you're going to have to this. Like, the reason why I say that is because when you think about with college coaches and everything like that, these motherfuckers leave whenever, however, to whoever. And so they're not going to basically give a different structure than they would to the athletes necessarily. Your contract is your contract, and that's what basically you do. Mm-hmm. You're not going to have any, like, buyouts or, you know, this and that. Like, it's going to be, hey, I got to fulfill this, and this is what it is. Now, they might have some circumvention where it's like, you said I'm on a 3-year deal with Tulane, or I'm on a 4-year deal with Alabama. It's like, nah, I'm going to go retire, then I'm going to wait a year, and then I'm going to go transfer to another school, and then I'm going to basically get whatever money they're going to give. I think that's going to be the future state. I think all, like, with Amoliva, I can't remember how, Nico, with Nico, formerly of Tennessee Vols, seemingly formerly of Tennessee Vols, he could always change his mind and go back to the team. But the thing about it is, like, I don't see it being where there's going to be a structural change. We talked about maybe a salary cap, and you could go back to our November 5th, 2023 episode where we actually talk about a salary cap, you know, and the possibility of that within college sports because of the amount of competition and everything like that. But overall, it's going to get to a point where I think more kids are going to probably try to stay with a school because it might mess up their, these more top name prospects. Like the lower guys where you guys are coming, like a Cam Ward, for that matter, like coming out of certain schools that aren't at a higher stature, going from Incarnate Word, alma mater, to Washington State, to Miami, more upward movement. You don't have that. But like Nico basically going from Tennessee is not a ton of schools where you can basically be like, oh shit, he gonna go there. Maybe Georgia, maybe something like that. But like he's kind of in the SEC, that creme de la creme, maybe goes to like the Big Ten or something. But like overall, like it's gonna be to where shit is kind of gonna be the same. This is just a crazy moment to happen with this guy as he's about to enter the draft next year, seemingly.
I'm going to say this. He had, to me, a lot of college money. He made $2.4 million on a contract that was reportedly worth $8 million. Okay? And that he wanted closer to $10 million. Okay? I'm going to say this. I think this is where people's ability and what they want to get paid in college, it's slightly, they're getting too ahead of themselves. Okay? Because I'm going to be honest with you. If I was a college kid and I made $2.4 million last year, I want you to think about this, Rob. If it was me or you, and we was at a school and we made $2.4 million in college, I'd shut my mouth and just be ready for next season, okay? I'ma chill out. I probably got an apartment off campus. I'm doing my thing. I'm good.
So, because I saw this point, basically, somebody pointed out on Blue Sky. The point that basically he saw, and like a lot of these other quarterbacks are seeing, is Carson Beck getting $4 million from Miami. And I would basically be like how old boy was in the wood. Like, you let the nigga Terry Bone. I know I look better than that nigga. Like, I think that they're basically seeing it as, you let the Carson get $4 million. I know I'm 6 or maybe even 7. Like, I see that being the case. But the thing about it is, who are going to be the boosters that's not in the Big Ten or not possibly in other SEC schools that basically is going to put up that level of change? Maybe SMU or something like that, if they actually get the Dallas money kind of flowing. You know, somebody like that, maybe, like, but who is going to basically be the one that's going to up the ante, that's going to give him 4.5 or 5 or whatever it's going to be to Nico to go play quarterback for a year? And I mean, it could work out. Like, Nico was and is a top QB prospect within college football. He, you know, he had a nice year at Tennessee, but who going to give him that money? And that's going to be the biggest question.
I'm not against it being a money thing, though, but I'll say this. I feel like this is the point where some of them need to be grateful. Just be grateful that you out here getting this type of money to play college football. You ain't made it to the NFL yet, and you getting this, okay? That's a lot of money, especially to say you made $2.4 million in a college season.
Right. It's a lot.
That's a lot.
But it seems like with Carson Beck, and that being an example, the cost of the brick went up.
It's going to be a dangerous situation. And like I said, I can see the salary cap coming in. They might figure out how to salary cap this shit.
If there's going to be revenue sharing, I think there's going to be a salary cap, because it's going to be the haves and have-nots of college football. And it's going to be either they're going to break these cats off into their own league, or they're going to basically make it to where there's a competitive balance between all college football teams, to where you can basically have. And to be honest, it might just get to where it's like, you just going to have have leagues and have not leagues. And that's it. You know, like, we just going to have the Big Ten and the SEC going to play in this whole league, and then everybody else going to play in the other. Broke boy league, big man league, and that's it.
That'll be a hell of a way for it to pan out if that's how it's going to pan out, because it's going to be the rich thick pockets versus the pockets that ain't there. Because we all know the SEC, especially the SEC and Big Ten, the pockets is deep. Them pockets on Respucia, okay? Them pockets is out there. We all know this. We're watching this in real time. Because I'll be damn, $2.4 million, I'd have said, look, I know y'all giving Carson $4. I'd have just chilled out. I'd have been like, you know what, Carson? I am gonna be mad at you, Carson. I'm going to let you go ahead and get you.
Bravo.
I'd have sat back. I'd have been like, I can make 8 just staying here. I'm going to just sit my ass here. I was 10-3. I'm cool. Just you know, I ain't gonna answer too much more. I'll be all right. $2.4 million. I'm good, coach. I'm good. I'll be here next season. We gonna make a run, coach. We gonna make a run. And that's how I'd have left that at that, but I'd have left that alone where it was. We shall see how this whole thing works out for Mr. I'm a leaving. If I was him, I'd go back to where my money is, but. With that being said, this was Bruh Me Goes Podcast. And remember, like, subscribe. It's free to subscribe. You can always change your mind. It costs you nothing. Follow us.
Free 99.
Follow us. We Blue Sky. We Spotify. We YouTube. We everywhere. Maybe even look up in the sky and you'll see us up there. That's just how we do, you know? Now, Rob, anything you want to say before we go ahead and get up out of here?
Good night, Canada. Good night, Taylor Swift. Hey, man, look, hope y'all have a great weekend. Hope y'all, you know, stay cool, man. Like, you know, weather's changing. It ain't quite, you know, get everybody sick weather, but, you know, stay, you know, diseases are out there, you know, COVID spreading around again, you know, stay masked up if that's what you need to do. Do whatever you can to protect yourself. So, but everybody be good to others. Peace.
And we out of here. Deuces.
Deuces.
Thanks for checking out this episode of the Bra Amigos podcast. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.